So good to be with you. So good to be able to share some thoughts with you. This is, the other day that Philip had finished his 101, Bible 101. He said this is rollout day, which is like, you know, an introduction to some project that he's been working on that is to, you know, further the our work as a congregation, as individuals, and our growth in the Lord. So this is rollout day for me. And those of you, hopefully at least by family, you got at least one copy of this work that I have done. But this is a project that I've had in my mind to do for a long time. And because I took the class with Jonathan and John, it kind of gave me a month or so ago, it kind of gave me the initiative, you know, to actually get it out of my head and onto some paper and, you know, actually do it, which a lot of us guys need that kind of thing. You actually have to have some, you know, purpose to do things. So this was mine. And so the premise of this work, and we'll as I say, we're not going to go through all of this. There's 19 pages of material here. This is just an introduction to it for your purpose, you know, just to familiarize you with what it is. So I'm not going to keep you here to supper time, you know, going through all of these pages. But there's good material here, I believe, and I think it's something that will be useful to you, not just today, not just next week or next year, but really for the rest of your lives, I hope. And I believe it's that valuable, you know, not because it comes from me, but rather because these are things in which all Christians ought to know and be very familiar with. So the premise and the concept for this work, this material, is that if indeed the Bible is true in reality, there ought to be tangible, physical, self-evident, obvious facts that show that it is true. And of course, all of us here believe that it is. But if you were asked to give an assessment of you, if you were asked, well, I don't believe the Bible, why should I believe the Bible? Could you, as a Christian right now, could you begin to lay out the reasons that you have a trust in this book? I don't know how many of you can do this, but I'm going to guess that there are lots of people who call themselves Christians that really would not be able to do that well. You may think of a few things, and obviously we've had classes on apologetics and evidences and things of that nature. But what happens sometimes is that you'll go through a sermon or a class like this, and maybe you'll remember the material for the rest of the day, maybe the next day, but then it just kind of fades away. The facts or the essence of a lot of the material just kind of fades from your mind. You get busy with other things, and that's just the way we humans work so often. But if there are those tangible, hard facts, then Christians ought not only to know what they are, but also have a system in place in our minds whereby we can recall it easily. And that's what I've had in my mind to do for a long time, is to develop some system by which you can retrieve factual information at will. Wouldn't you like to be able to do that as a Christian? I know I would. And that's why this we're going over this paper today. So in this paper, in this material, I address two main things. And that is, what are these hard facts, this evidence of the Bible being so true? And number two is, how can I remember them? How can I keep it in my mind where I just floats away because I can't remember everything? So the plan here is this morning is to look at the first page here, the cover page, and then the last couple of pages, and if we have a little bit of time, maybe look at some of the content of this material. But mainly really the first and the last of it, as I said, because we're not going to try to actually cover all the content, because it's a lot, you know, it's a lot of material. But it's you know, I have literally five shelves of books that are just on evidences. And I know some of you have a lot of books on evidence as well. I have five shelves of books on this kind of material. So this isn't five shelves of books. It's 18 pages of material. And the 19th one is a memory tool, which we'll get into in a moment. In other words, this is doable. It is reasonable for you to read over and over, you know, and have a system of memory, which we'll talk about, and actually be able to be fluent and conversant about the most important thing in our lives, which is the truth, which is belief in the Bible, belief in Jesus, our faith that we hold and have every expectation of the Lord returning someday and catching us together with Him to ever be with the Lord. We all believe these things. Now, how do we convey that belief to other people in a reasonably intelligent way so that they can believe it too, like we've come to believe it and understand it? So let's look at the cover page here for a moment, if you've got, and Ken, you can put that up on the screen at this time. There we go. And I want to thank both Ken and Sandy worked really hard. I sent this to them in a PDF document, and I had no idea how to convert this into a PowerPoint for the screen, but they worked very hard on doing this, and I'm very thankful for their hard work on this. Now, let's start at the top here, which I've already said this. Why should I believe the Bible? Well, what I found is that many, many people out here in the world generally, and not only people in the world that have a secular worldview, but many people who call themselves Christians do not understand what faith is. What many people believe is that faith is just that belief in the Bible is just an act of faith. I've heard preachers say this, not among our group, but among when I listen to people on the radio or on the internet, they'll say, this is something you just got to take it by faith. Well, what does that mean? Take it by faith. You mean against all the odds? Do you mean against all the evidence? We just have to accept something that makes no sense to us? No, that's not right. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Evidence. God does not expect us to have a blind faith. He would not do that to us. He expects us to have a faith, though, that is based on reasonable evidence that declares His glory and all the things that He has revealed to us. So, if we were talking, let me just say this about faith generally, and the way that secular people might view it. And I've listened to multiple debates where atheists or agnostics will be debating a Christian, and they will say, well, you just have to accept that by faith. Well, and their definition of faith, as I've just mentioned, is very different from the Bible definition of faith. Now, if you were talking about Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy or the Big Bang Theory or life coming from non-life, yes, that would be blind faith. All of those are equally blind faith or fairy tales. So, but that's not the Bible faith. I also hear atheists very often make this case against the God of the Bible. They will say, well, you know, we don't believe in Zeus or Thor or Odin or Shiva or Vishnu or Brahma. We don't believe in any of those gods, and you Christians don't believe in any of those gods. So we atheists just go one God more. We don't believe in the one called Jehovah either. We don't believe in the one called Jesus either. So you don't believe in a whole lot of historical gods. So we don't either. We don't believe in any of those gods either. We just go one God further. I hear this all the time. So what's the difference? What's the difference between Jehovah, God of the Bible, and Odin, or any of the Norse gods, or Baal, or Molech, or Dagon? What's the difference? Well, this material addresses this question, and it's a very important question. It's one that all of us ought to be able to answer. And that's why I put on here, it's a good question. Why should I believe the Bible? It's a good question, but there's a good answer. And here it is. Here's a good answer to that good question. There are answers to this. Well, this first few sentences here are well-packed sentences that can be expanded on and unpacked, which is what we're going to do right now for a few minutes. So let's look at this first one in blue. Historicity. Has anybody, I'm sure people here have heard of that word, historicity. A lot of people haven't heard it. And that's actually a good way to start a conversation. Have you ever heard the word historicity? And you could, whether they said yes or no, it's still a starting point. You say, oh, you are familiar with that. Okay. So here's a common definition of it. Historicity is the consistent confirmation across many varied lines of evidence, like the record of specific people, places, and events through time, that authenticate the reality of a primary source. Now, this would be a general definition that's not necessarily specific to the Bible, but rather a primary source, like, let's just say, Homer's Iliad, or maybe historical information about the Caesars, Augustus Caesar, or historic information about Alexander the Great, okay? Things like that. So what are these lines of evidence? Well, here's a few that I wrote down, and there's this and more in this material that you have in your hands. And incidentally, I just gave mostly one to per family, but there's more of these available on the left on that little table there. I set up more copies of it on that table that usually just collects miscellaneous unrelated items that as I've noticed over the past time. There were some, I don't know, baby toys and fans and miscellaneous papers and stuff. So now it has something a little bit more coherent on that table. So what are these lines of evidence? Well, what about this? A well-recorded genealogy that leads to a people who still exist in our modern world. That's a line of evidence. What about this? A homeland of a people that has remained there for hundreds, or sometimes, in some cases, thousands of years. That would be a pretty good line of evidence if that was the case, wouldn't it? What about this? a consecutively kept ritual or memorial to a person or an event that is kept repeatedly through history. That would be a pretty good line of evidence, wouldn't it? You know what? We're still here in July. It's the last day, isn't it? July. Then we're going into August. Well, earlier in the month, we celebrate here in America, what? The 4th of July, which is actually not, we don't celebrate it as being a day. It's actually Independence Day, right? So we celebrate Independence Day on the 4th of July. Well, why is that? Well, because in 1776, there was an original 4th of July that was used for signing the Declaration of Independence. So this is a case in point, and we'll make other cases in point in this material here. But here is an annual event that rolls around every year that marks something very important in our nation's history, Independence Day. But it doesn't really stop there, because Independence Day is only one thing of a whole lot of other things that are intertwined together. Like, for example, the Revolutionary War. Like the existence of people like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, who helped to write the Declaration of Independence. And then the implication of that one fact, if we were to take time to do it, goes back much, much farther. And if this was a secular history class, we could go back and talk about, you know, England and pilgrims, you know, and 1620 and 1621 and 1492 and all kinds of other dates that might come into your mind related to how most of us Europeans, a few of them aren't, Charles is back there, he's from Jamaica, but it's interesting how we got here. So here's another one. Number four is tangible physical proof of the specific person, place, or event. Now, this is archaeology is what I'm referring to here. Tangible evidence that is on the earth today that we can easily verify. You can go to museums and see these things. You can go to Israel. I've never been there, but some have. And there's the Israel Museum that has lots and lots of very interesting artifacts that relate to Christianity and relate to the Israelites generally. So these things are still here. They're still here. I'll give you quickly an example of that. The Western Wall. The wall known as the Wailing Wall. Well, what is that? Well, what it is the retaining wall for the temple complex that was built by Herod, and that he started that about 19 BC. But before that, what else was there? Now, this is what I'm talking about the implications of one thing. The existence of one thing implies a whole host of other things that go back before it. What was before Herod's temple? Well, there was the rebuilt temple under Ezra and Nehemiah. But what was before that? Well, there was Solomon's temple, which was built by Solomon. But who planned that? Well, David did. You see how these things connect together? How one thing proves a whole host of other things that fall in exact the same line, that are woven together, and you can't take them out. Here's another one. A written record, well documented and preserved in history. Boy, that's exactly what we have in the Bible. A written record that is preserved in very, very particular ways. The scribes were good at what they did. They were professionals. They were professional writers and copyists. They knew what they were doing. I said I had never been to Israel, but some of you may have seen, I saw the some of the Dead Sea Scrolls that were in a moving exhibit some years ago down in Charlotte. We went down there to see them. They were remarkable, amazing, beautiful calligraphy, all in perfect little lines. There were 40 caves, or 11 caves rather, and 40,000 fragments in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Every single book of the Old Testament was in there except the book of Esther. And not only the books, but endless, almost commentaries on the books. But we have actually the Ketuv Anim silver amulets are further back, that are much further than that. So all of this is in this material here. So a written record, that's a line of evidence that is extremely hard proof of the record being true. One related to that is eyewitness accounts, eyewitness testimony that is dutifully written down in the lifetime, within the lifetime of the person who was an eyewitness to something, an account. And there is an explanation in this with many points. But Brother Earl did a sermon a week or so ago that talked about the resurrection. And there's many, many points in this booklet here that you hold that relate to the evidence of the resurrection. The resurrection is probably one of, if not the most well accounted for events of all history. There is so much evidence that it's true, that it is totally overwhelming. You have to have help not to believe it. It is so overwhelming. And all of that is in here as well. I'll give you one more. Biology, geology, earth sciences of various kinds prove the Bible to be true. And there's a whole section on science here. So all of these, I want you to get to know this material and be as familiar with this material as you are with the Bible itself. And it will help you to become a more effective Christian. Now, let's look at this next sentence here that gives us a prime example, a case in point of historicity that's applied to the Bible. And that's what the substance of this paper is about. So look at the sentence here in black. The timeline and events of the Bible are inextricably woven into the fabric of history through matching in detail the facts as found in the real world of today. Again, that's a very packed sentence. That's a very packed sentence that requires some unpacking. And I actually, myself and my class are memorizing these first three sentences that we have on the board now. It's on the cover of this page because I really think that if, you know, you can memorize the content of something or maybe remember the content of something, but if you actually memorize the sentence and you just got it right there at the tip of your tongue, it is so helpful to be able to converse about it when you've actually got it in your mind. So, let's look at this sentence. What do we mean by woven together? That the Bible events and timeline are inextricably woven into the fabric of history. Well, I brought a piece of woven fabric here. My mother-in-law, who died several years back, she was a seamstress, and we inherited a lot of fabrics. She was an artist, amazing. She was, the best seamstress that I've ever known. She did amazing curtain work and just all kinds of things like that. But this is a piece of upholstery fabric. And the point that I'm making here in this section, the idea of woven fabric as opposed to printed fabric, there's a difference between woven fabric and printed fabric. Now, a piece of upholstery fabric like this is much more expensive, or if you were to go out and buy it by the bolt, you know, or by the yard, it would be much more expensive than a printed fabric typically. And the reason it's much more expensive is the process to get it this way is much more time-consuming and intricate process than printing. Because all of the threads that run through this fabric in order to make this fruit and leaf design here on this black background, all of the threads that are running through that are actually running through the entire bolt of material. In other words, the threads don't stop and start within the design. They run all the way through the design and simply appear at different areas in the design in order to create what you see. And that's easy to show because if you look at the back of it, then you see kind of a negative of what's on the front. See that? So that's upholstery fabric, or some people would say tapestry. The tapestries were made this way. So this is a woven piece of fabric. And the point that I want to make here as it relates to this sentence is that you cannot, if I ask you to come and pull this thread right there out of this fabric, you can't do it. Why can you not do it? Because it is tightly woven into the whole piece. Now, if you took a razor blade and, you know, you carefully cut everything else away from it, you might be able to get a thread out. I don't know. I've never tried that. But the bigger point is, you can't just, this is inextricable. You cannot extract one thread out because everything is woven together in one piece. Now, that's the way history is. History, and the history of the Bible in particular, which is what we're talking about now, is inextricably woven into the fabric of history in such a way that you cannot extract it. You can't get it out because all the events of history are locked in place. Just like these colored threads that make up this fabric are locked in place. That's why you know, if you're going to upholster a couch or something, you might prefer something like this because it doesn't fade, not like a printed fabric does, because all the individual threads that make it up are individually dyed with light, fast dyes, so that it doesn't fade, at least not very easily. And the same thing is true. So what are all these threads? Well, the threads are like the lines of evidence. They're the lines of history that all lock together. So this, all of these threads and all these details of facts are found in the real world of today. So the source of the Bible is authenticated as reliable and factual, and that you can trust it because of all these lines of evidence. And then the last phrase that I have here, the earth is a museum to the validity of God's word. That's really what it is. It is like a museum to validate the Bible because everywhere we look, we see the Bible history validated and all the accounts seen as valid and true. Now, this is just an introduction to this material, so don't worry, we're not going to, you know, try to cover all of this. But let's look at, we'll just look at the first page here. Ken, if you will, well, I can do it right here. Let's see. Or at least I thought, okay, there we go. All right, let's go to the first, or the second page, page two. We'll just look at this first couple of things here, or maybe just the first one. I'm running out of time as it is. So here's number one. You've got a lot more of this, but this is just a sampling, okay? Spanning more than 4,000 years from Abraham and the fulfilled promises given to him by God of a great nation, land, name, and a seed that would come from him in which all nations would be blessed. The descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and his 12 sons are still among us today as a living testimony of a chosen people now called the Jews. Now, there's a lot more we could say about that. I'm just going to leave it at that at the moment because we've got other things to do here. But now I want to, let's go to the next to the last, well, let's see. That would be, let me see what page that is. Go to page 18. And we'll go through this relatively quickly here. Now what this is I'm kind of calling this a Christian apologetics kit. Everybody likes a kit, don't you? I like kits. You know, kit is something you get and you maybe put together or there's something to do about it, you know, with it. So look here just below John 14:17 and look at these words here. For those of you who aspire to become Christian apologists, defenders of the faith, here is a neat memory tool to set you on your way. An acronym based on the above lines of evidence that is easy to remember and gives you a ready answer to those who would ask you a reason for the hope that is in you. Of course, that's 1 Peter 3:15. So here I'll give you actual instructions. Isn't this exciting? I know what it says, and I'm excited. What in the, you know, instructions? This is great. Fold the following page in half the long way. Cut or tear along the fold line and place in a prominent place that you see often, refrigerator, mirror, etc., and review often. Slowly add the lines of evidence to your memorized outline and then practice talking through them and about them to people you know. In time, your comfort level with this material will give you the confidence to engage others in various settings in the future. I don't know if, let's see. Oh, I need to advance this. Okay, there you go. Sorry about that. One good way to begin this kind of conversation is to ask your friend or acquaintance if they have ever heard of the word historicity. Whether the answer from them is yes or no gives you a starting point forward. Make sure that you can explain the content on the cover page or even memorize it. The goal is to become fluent and conversational in helping people to understand how the world as it exists today has resulted from the self-evident facts of the existence of many people and events from many yesterdays. That's it. The world needs more Christians who are prepared to support their faith with facts. So, toward the back here, you can see the page 19, you can see that there is an acronym here. I've been pretty big on acronyms. Rachel Messer observed that and said that I was the king of acronyms. So I'm trying to maintain my throne here. you know, as the king of acronyms. So I created another one. Rachel's not here today, but so here we have the words historical facts. So if you can spell historical facts, let me get to that slide too. There we go. If you can spell historical facts, that is the key then to memorizing this outline of material. And then all you have to do from that point forward is just over time add the content of each one of these words or phrases to what you've already got. All of learning is like this. All of learning is like is adding something else to what you already know. If you already know something, then you can add more to it over time. And if you already know this list, and it's not hard to memorize, I assure you, it's not hard. Historical facts, and each one of these categories is a line of evidence, like we've been talking about. And then you can memorize this fairly quickly, and then a Sunday afternoon, like this afternoon, is a good time, at least for me, it's a good time to study these kinds of things when you maybe you not have to go, don't have to go to work, don't have to go to school, don't have a lot of other things that you have to do. We could become a powerhouse in this Asheville area of people who know their evidences just from this one thing. And I'm encouraging you to do that and take advantage on it. Let me say something here about the case of, or the state of affairs in our country generally, just with maybe a few examples. There's a lot more I can say about this. Incidentally, if you want a PDF, if you would like for me to email you a PDF copy of this whole document, if you're visiting with us and you would like this, all you have to do is give me your email address, and I will happily email you the actual thing so that you can, theoretically, you could do what I've done here, which is print it off. So anyway, if you want that, then please let me know. And that's for our congregation here as well. I know a lot of people like to have everything on their phone these days. I'm not one of those, but a lot of people do. So I am pretty keen on actually knowing things. Internally. As opposed to just having access to material. Like, all of us have access to material, but not all of us actually know it. You're much, much, much more effective as a Christian if you actually know the material. That's what I'm advocating here. So, you know, when you know facts, and you know the truth, then it's much more difficult to be deceived by things in the world. It's much more difficult to be lied to be scammed, to be programmed, to be brainwashed, if you actually know things and you have them settled in your mind. We shouldn't constantly be dependent on a device for the things that are permanent and unchanging truths. We need to have them in our heads, not on a device, not on a computer, in our heads. It's very important. One of the reasons that I think so many people are so easily convinced of absurd things is because they relinquish their critical thinking to other people whom they believe to be experts. And they trust in this authoritative figure. In fact, if you take any person and you ask them, who are you listening to? What are you watching? Who are you listening to? You're going to find out who their authority is, what their source and worldview, where it comes from. Let me throw out a couple of examples here. Do you think that people who believe and promote the idea that there was an eternal invisible dot smaller than the quark of an atom made of helium and hydrogen, the two lightest elements on the periodic table, that invisible dot exploded and became a universe of unfathomable size and energy? Do you think a person that believes and promotes that knows anything of value? I don't think so. There may be some things that they know, but I would not trust them when it comes to ultimate truths, because they don't know it. All they have done is they have applied supernatural, godlike, miraculous qualities to an invisible dot, and just so they could eliminate God from the picture. That's all any of that is. Do you think if we are living in a culture today that believes in many ways that you can just make up what is true? You and I see this all the time. You can just make up what's true. Now, we could give a lot of examples of this. Like, for example, men can become women, or women can become men just by sheer willpower, biology notwithstanding. That's what many people believe today. The latest absurdity, and I saw some, perhaps some of you guys saw this, some of you all saw this, that they had a professional witness on the stand in the Congress of the United States talking about, it was related to abortion, but this woman said that men could have babies and men could have abortions. This is absurd. These are absurdities. How does this happen? That's what I want to know. How does this happen? We've got a Supreme Court justice, Judge Jackson. By the way, I think intelligence is highly overrated. There's lots of smart people. Lots of very highly... Judge Jackson is an intelligent woman, but her ideology has put her leftist views and ideology has put her in a pickle to where she doesn't know what a woman is. How does this happen? Well, let me, I don't have all the answers, but let me suggest something for you here. This is just, you know, my thinking, but is it possible? Let me catch up with my notes here. I get ahead of myself. Is it possible that because they don't have any actual standard of truth, like a plumb line or a measuring tape, as it were, is it possible that all of their sense of what truth is liquid and basically fluid, and what determines their truth for them is what goes viral on the YouTube or on some video or TikTok or some social media, so that everything they know is simply constantly changing because they have no standard of truth to begin with? I think that may be part of it. And there's probably a lot of other things that could be, you know, said, but my point again is, you young people here, You need to actually know things in order to not be deceived by the things of the world. There are many people from the highest levels to the lowest levels of political realms, educational realms, all kinds of other things that are being deceived with absurd notions, just like these that I have mentioned this morning. The Bible is the ultimate standard, and this material you're holding in your hands is how we know the Bible is true. Now, how do you file these things away? Well, we've just showed you that in the acronym. All right, so let me take the last few minutes here and then we'll stop. You know, I don't feel so bad about going till noon now because Philip does it nearly every Sunday. So it used to be that I would preach for an hour and I would think, oh man, I just really put them through a lot. But then, you know, Philip brings us regular lessons that last close to an hour. But I love it. I'm not against it. He tells the truth. So let me talk just about this for a moment. You'll notice that this is not made of cheap 20-pound typing paper. This is 65-pound parchment, which is much better. This is hand-printed by yours truly. This is hand-punched by yours truly. This is tied lovingly by Gina and Sadie, who Sadie's actually here today. She's been at our house for a little while, recovering from a sickness, so today's her last day for a while. She's going back to be with my mom and dad for a while. I say all that to say this. I'm not looking for pats on the backs or compliments or anything like that. The point of this is that I did all these things to impress upon you that this is important. That this isn't something you take home and throw in the trash. I know you know that. But it's also something that you don't take home and file away and never see it again. This is fundamental information that you need. And you need to memorize it. It's fundamental to your being a Christian who can become confident in your understanding and articulate and conversational in your dialogue towards others and why you believe the things that you believe. Well, we'll bring this to a close here. I want to say to young people here that if you have this in your minds, it will ground you. I wish I had had something like this when I was growing up in my mom and dad's house. I didn't, at least not that I recall. But this is something that you can take. And incidentally, again, there are more copies of this there in the back on the left and the table there. So you can take more copies if you can use more. And I plan to make more myself as well. So you can help others to understand this as well. And we'll close with that. And this is copyright-free material, by the way. It's all mine, and I'm giving you I'm handing it to you. If you want to print, I wish somebody would take up the job of printing these and translating them into all languages and distributing them to all 7.5 billion people on Earth. If you want to take that project up, I'm all for it. Okay, so. That's how important I believe this is. And once you begin to read through it, I believe that you will see that it is extremely important material as well. Perhaps we will, I'm thinking about maybe doing another sermon or two on this as, you know, I have time to, or I'm asked to fill in or whatever in time's future, just to kind of keep it in front of us a little bit. So thank you for your patience and thank you for your attention. So good to be with all of you today, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon. So with that, if there's anybody that I can help in any way to get closer to the Lord, then we'll invite you to do that while together we stand and sing.